Drinks.
Hey everyone, welcome to Why Mommy Drinks. This is Betsy Stover.
And I'm Amanda Allen.
Wow, that said it all.
Yeah.
This episode, we are honored to be joined by a fellow podcaster and a writer, Allison Rosen.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Hello.
Hello. I'm excited to talk to other parents because I am just, my child has turned into, well, he had turned into an asshole. I have a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old. And
oh my God. 3-year-old,
yeah, turned into an asshole like a few months ago. And then he had come out of it and was like wonderful. And then now he's in a new trying phase, which I'll get into later.
Oh, so you have a 1-year-old and a 3-year-old. And
yes.
are they both boys, you said?
Both boys, yeah. Elliot is the 3-year-old and Owen is the 1-year-old. Okay. Actually, they're both about almost 3.5 and almost 1.5.
So she's in
You're
the
in it.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-mm. Yeah, yeah.
Well, I have 3 boys, so I see you, Allison.
Thank you.
I see you. I see the future you. they are 4 years old, and then I also have an 8-year-old and a 9-year-old.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, well, get ready to listen to Amanda.
I've got 17 kids and counting. No. It feels that way,
but,
though,
well,
honestly.
She's got sister wives, though, so that's how it works.
No, I have a 9-year-old boy and twin 7-year-old girls. So,
oh my goodness,
it's super fun.
Yeah, she's got us all beat.
Just because they came at the same time.
How did you feel when you found out you were having twins? Because when I did IVF to have both of my kids. And when I was first pregnant with Elliot, initially it was twins. And it was a really weird feeling because I knew I should just be overjoyed because there was a good chance that IVF wasn't going to work. I did like 8 million shots and 8 million retrievals. And, you know, it was so lucky that I was able to get pregnant. And I always wanted 2 kids, although now I kind of want 3, even though I don't think that's biologically possible. But so when I found out that I was pregnant with twins, I just remember being like, this is not how I wanted it to be. I didn't, but I'm so happy. But oh my God, how am I even going to carry like both of them down the stairs? How am I going to do this? Yeah. And then I'm like between 7.5 and 8.5 weeks, I miscarried one of them, which was sad, but not the same level of devastation as like if you have a singleton miscarriage, because I was still pregnant.
And it also took out of the equation the thing that you were one of the biggest worries that you were having.
Exactly. But I felt really guilty about worrying about that. But so I felt guilty about the relief that I felt.
Don't feel guilty.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'm glad that
you're saying that. I bet so many people have experienced that and have the same exact feelings.
Mm-hmm. I think so. Because did either of you guys do IVF or are you people for whom sex works?
I mean, I don't know if sex works, but certainly fertilization works. And you know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah, no. Yeah. I no.
Okay.
Sorry.
So, but we've had tons of guests on that have talked about IVF and stuff. I mean, never enough, honestly, for my taste, but yeah.
Do you love it?
I feel like it's so many people I know have experienced that, and yet I feel like we haven't really talked that much about it on the show, you know? Don't you think, Amanda?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think, and so I've always been very open about it, and I talked about it on my podcast.
Tell everyone the names of your podcast.
Okay, so I host Allison Rosen Is Your New Best Friend, and then I also host a parenting-ish podcast called Childish. And I say parenting-ish because we also talk about, like, a lot of our listeners don't have children, but it is a parenting podcast. Really, isn't that cool?
Yeah, I think it's amazing.
I love it. Because, Well, this is not really a parenting podcast because we don't tell anyone how to do shit. It's more just like it's a comedy podcast and there's Schadenfreude.
Yeah. Well, it's a cautionary tale.
What'd you say?
I said it's a cautionary tale.
It's a fashion retail.
It's a fashion retail. Like, oh no, Amanda really has short-circuited.
Sorry, Allison, go on.
It's okay. On mine, we do get people writing in being like, listening to you guys makes me think I never want to have kids.
Yep.
saying, just because we're so honest about it. But so I, you know, I have my little guys, and then my co-host Greg Fitzsimmons has an 18-year-old and a 16-year-old.
Oh,
so it's nice to have those two different perspectives. But we do actually give, and I was saying to you guys before we started, we do give advice on my show. And oftentimes I'm like, wait, why are we doing this? I need advice. I'm the one who needs advice right now. But you know, we do it anyway. So what I was saying before about IVF is that when you do it, you know, everything, it's just, you're so focused on just getting pregnant, having that baby. And there's like a emotional investment and financial investment and so much, you know, and physical investment. And like, you try to tell yourself, I'm going to be okay no matter what the outcome. Like, you try to get into this weird Zen place, but it's really hard to, have done all that stuff and then be like, it didn't work out for us and that's okay. So I think that then, you know, the whole thing is like just to get you pregnant. So then if you have any, you know, if you're then in, once you get pregnant, if it's like not, cause I didn't love being pregnant and I felt like such a dick.
Me neither. Yes.
I felt like such an, I felt like I was just supposed to be so grateful that I was now in this state that I had worked so hard to get into, but I was like, I want this child. I don't like being pregnant at all. And then once I had Elliot, I, like 5 months after I had him is when I kind of admitted that what I was experiencing was postpartum depression. It was a little more intense. More intense than like just baby blues, which is what I thought it was. And
baby blues is a bit of a myth, honestly.
Yes. There's so many myths about it, about how it's going to be right away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So. I feel like I'm just eating up all the oxygen on your show. Some talking, please.
No, I was just going to ask Amanda if you could tell us what's been breaking you lately.
So Wes is at camp now, which is pretty great. And he has he plays with his little safe COVID bubble where it's like the same families. We know them. They all go to this camp and they only play with each other and they like – it's been very successful for now a couple months. And I think it's been a lifesaver for all of us. But the other day while he was at camp, they were playing a game called Garbage, as you do, where I guess you scream out a food and if you'll eat it, you run and you try to cross the gym and there's a person that's it. And if they tag you, then you become the garbage person. I don't quite know.
I was in it for a minute there. So far, yeah. But then
you become the garbage person.
Let's say
and so
they yell like dog shit. Then what happens?
Yeah. Well, there's also a space where they yell garbage and then everyone runs. And so it dog shit, nobody moves. So that, you know, you got to say things that you actually want people to move to. So, so Wes was playing garbage. And it was very tense game. And somebody said sushi. And I guess Wes couldn't make up his mind whether he liked it or not. Neither could some of the other kids. And then finally, at the last minute, he was like, you know, I do like a good California roll. And he like bolted across as a California kid. You
that
know,
is
like
amazing.
He like, goes bolting across the gym. And his other friend was like, I like edamame. And like ran. And so they ran into each other.
Oh, no.
And his friend and him collided his eye into Wesley's chin, which split it open.
Oh.
Giant gash with blood going everywhere. Well, Emmeline sees Wesley bleeding and just goes, Wesley's dying! And then starts screaming and crying. Benny turns around and goes, Wesley's dying? Sees the blood everywhere. She starts screaming and crying. All the kids now are like, Wesley's dying. Wesley hears he's dying, so he starts hyperventilating. And this is camp. It's summer camp. So the little kids that they could get to come are 16-year-old kids.
Oh,
so,
God.
Like, you know, they're just like, oh, no. So we get the call. Come get him. It won't stop bleeding. So we're like, oh boy, he's going to need stitches. So we pick him up. It's true. It doesn't stop bleeding. The kids have calmed down. They all realize he's not going to die. I take Wesley to urgent care because I was scared of going to the ER just because COVID. Mm-hmm. And at least urgent care
is a little smaller. For everyone listening, Los Angeles is still like super hot
we're
spot
on lockdown
with COVID.
Still.
We haven't stopped being in lockdown this whole time.
No,
we're killing it literally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. We are the winners. So,
dude, did you guys see that fucking map of the world?
Yeah.
Everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're not allowed to go anywhere.
No.
Because we are contagious. Yeah. All right. Anyway, sorry.
Fun. I take him to urgent care. They do a good job making sure that keep people safe and away from everyone and clean. So that made me feel good. We get in there. And when they go to do, they were like, he's going to need 2 stitches. So when they go to do the 2 stitches, Wesley all of a sudden just starts screaming, I'm so scared. And then he's like, life is really hard right now. Why is this happening to me? Oh, I don't deserve this kind of life.
Oh, God.
Oh, my goodness.
Also, back it up. So he's on a table lying down. Yes. Is that what's happening?
In a tiny urgent care where everyone can hear everything.
And did they numb his chin? What's happened?
Well, this is before the numbing of the chin.
This is before before they even get to the stitches. This is what he's just yelling.
Yelling. And then he was like, I need you to explain every single part of the process. You're going to stick a needle in my chin? And then
I get that.
He wanted to know everything he's doing. And this one nurse was there. He's very sweet. He was like, how about I put a paper towel over your eyes? And then Wes was like, that's good. So he does. And then the guy picked his hands up and he was like, put your hands back down on that paper towel, please. And the guy was like, oh, okay. And he was like, well, you're a sophisticated one, aren't you?
So Wes needed his hand to be pressing down on the paper towel?
Like temples of his forehead while holding it. Yes. And then he was holding my hands. And then they were like trying to be nice. They're like, how many stitches do you think? And he's like, 2. I can hear. Like, he was just Mr. Old Man in full force. Just like, you dumbasses, just make this effing stop. Like, I have no space for you. What's the point? What is the point?
Isn't it awful when you're in pain and people are being patronizing? Do you know what I mean?
We were all just staring at each other yeah. But at one point, the nurse was like, you know what? It is really hard right now.
Yeah.
She was like, I can't do it either, kid.
Oh, no. That's supposed to be comforting.
He was verbalizing, I think, how we all feel, where it was just enough of all this. That's it. I've had it. I don't want to do it anymore. This is just fucking hard and I'm done. Hold that over my eyes, please. Thank you.
this is your 9-year-old?
My 9-year-old, yeah.
Is he normally really precocious like this?
He's,
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes. Yeah. He's, yeah. Yep.
Right? He's always been an adult.
He's always been an adult. He's, he's always seen life from the viewpoint that you would think you see it after you've gone through some experiences. He doesn't, he's just like, no, I demand an answer. And, you can show me what I need to know, and it's, he has always been kind of that way. Like I always describe him to people as saying he's the kid on the playground that sits on the park bench and talks about what the other kids are doing and why it's dangerous. And he doesn't get why they're doing that. Wes has been that way. He's gotten a little more rambunctious and a little more childlike as he's gotten older. He's like Peter Pan or not like Peter Pan, like Benjamin Buttons, but not Peter Pan. Peter Pan, yeah, I don't know.
Wait, really quick. I so relate to that. And my kids are that same way where, I think a lot of times at the dentist, at the doctor, people forget that they need to, narrate what they're doing so that kids don't freak out. We've been to the dentist before where the lady will just, she won't even say, hi, my name is whatever the fuck, and, here's what I'm doing. Let's do this. Here's why. Mm-hmm. And she just starts doing it, and the kids, freak out because some lady who they don't know put her hands in their mouth. Fucking just tell everyone what you're doing. I get it. I see you, Wes.
Uh-huh. Yeah, people forget they're these sentient little beings whose safety is in our hands, and they definitely have, they're taking it all in.
Yeah, we're not at the vet.
No, but I'm also terrible with this stuff. I should be better. I know better. But he'll be like, what's she going to do to me? And I'm like, I don't really know. I don't know.
But you were probably freaked out too.
I don't like watching. When they numbed his chin, I watched him just put it into his chin. And then they were going to start the stitches. And I was like, nope, I can't watch them do this to my child. Mm-hmm, and it was the smallest gash, like the tiniest of thing, you know, like it's not nothing. And it didn't
make me think. The stitches are gruesome. They are sewing a person's skin. It's really weird and gross. Mm-hmm. I get it.
Yeah. It's like, oh, hold on. I'm just going to stitch this up. Like, and I should have brought my dress that broke the other day. Right. Like, can you also continue on? I'm like, fix this. Thank you.
So weird. So
and it's
weird.
Never as like pretty as you think they're going to do. Like you think it's going to be just perfect. And it's, I feel like it's always like, wait, what? You couldn't do better than that?
Yeah. I was literally thinking about that recently. I was thinking that it's not like hemming a dress. Like it is not a uniform, neat stitch. It's always like this person barely knows how to sew.
Yes.
Yeah.
Why is always that? Jacked.
Yeah.
I don't get it. Like, I'm so sorry. Are you in a rush? What's happening?
Like, can you send in the nurse to do the stitches? They're like, oh, no. Oh,
no, I gotta.
Or a seamstress.
Yeah.
With my kids, when they got vaccine or when they get vaccines, I still look away. Like, even though I'm holding them, I look away because I just can't.
Vaccines were the hard part of having twins. That was one of the hardest parts for me because I would have three kids in a doctor's office by myself, and then they give a shot and you have to hold the baby and comfort the baby, and then they give another shot, so you have to give the baby away to the nurse that you would have in there and be like, hold the baby, oh, and the next baby I'm sad about. And then like Wes would just be running in between everybody being like, they scream a lot, you know, you're like, I know, and then you do more. Yeah, like, it was just, that was one thing that like I still can't believe how hard just vaccines were with all of them.
Oh my God. Poor Wes having like an existential freak out on the table.
Yeah, he did. And then, you know, then I told him because we had to go to get them removed. And I was like, the removal's the easy part. That's the easy part. It's just like tugging on your skin. It'll be fine because it's healed. And then this time we went back to his doctor. Because we were like, well, they can remove it. We don't have to go to the urgent care where someone might be sick with COVID. But so we were like, we took him to the doctor and the doctor was like, these are really embedded. They were like, and I just was like, oh, come on. Like I told this kid this was the easy part. And like, they had to really work to get them out. But
it hurt.
It did. But he did better with that one. He did much better with that one. I think the needle, like, and the scariness of the blood, like, I think it just was all so intense, but with taking and he also knows like, oh, I got like a whole bunch of Pokemon cards and ice cream last time. So it's on, you know.
Good.
So, yeah, because then I'm like, you did that, anything you want. Like, just
yep.
So
whatever, just to make you happy.
Yeah. He's never gonna play garbage again. He did say he really loves he loves that this happened to him now, looking back at it. Because he can sit out of all of the activities at
oh my God.
That's like the most West thing in the whole world. He's like, yeah, I can sit out. They just let me choose.
Oh my God.
Good. Good.
That's good. Like-
See, that I relate to so intensely. Like, yes. I just want to sit down.
I don't want to do this. But I love too that the reason it all happened is because he hesitated on whether or not he likes sushi. Really
the
thinking about
kid,
it.
The one who liked edamame, is he okay?
He was okay. He got hit in his eye, but it didn't get cut. So yeah. And it was like his best friend, so he felt terrible. Oh, he was like, but that's what happens. And I also felt very lucky that we haven't had more trips, knock on wood, to the emergency room. Yeah. You know?
We just had Steph Escajeda on the other day, and I watched the episode of United We Fall, which is the show based on her life that she wrote on with her husband. And they did a whole episode where they go to the ER, and it was hilarious.
Today's episode is brought to you by Jonas Paul Eyewear. They specialize in glasses for kids and teens aged 4 to 16. If your kid wears glasses, you know how difficult it is to find cute, comfortable frames, and you also probably know what a pain in the butt it usually is to get glasses. When I've gotten glasses for my kids, I had to drive an hour away to a specialty store, and then every single time there was an adjustment or an issue, I had to drive an hour there and then an hour back, and it was not great. But now I am so excited to try Jonas Paul Eyewear. Their mission is to help kids feel beautiful and confident in their glasses, and you know that if they're gonna actually wear them, that's super important. They offer a home try-on kit for just $1 that allows you to try out their glasses for a week without even leaving your home. There are no extra trips to the eye doctor. There's no more feeling rushed or pressured to get everything before you're ready. You can just order online, test out the glasses, and you can do it all from home. Prescription glasses start at $79, and that includes the prescription lenses. They also have blue light blocking lenses that are available for all of their frames, prescription and non-prescription, and they are perfect for extra screen time and online learning. So check it out. You, our listener, can save 15% off. You just go to JonasPaulEyewear.com and you use the code WhyMommyDrinks15, the number 15, and you get 15% off. Jonas Paul Eyewear, 15% off, WhyMommyDrinks15.
Do you experience stress or have anxiety or chronic pain? Or do you have trouble sleeping at least once a week? Listen, you are not alone. Many of us do. Personally, I struggle to sleep almost every night, especially since this pandemic has started. So, in searching for anything that could help, I discovered Feels. What is Feels, you ask? Well, Feels is a premium CBD that's delivered directly to your doorstep, and it naturally helps reduce stress, anxiety, pain, and sleeplessness. So, over time, using it, it helps you to relieve anxiety without the feeling of being high. Like, it's not like you get stoned. It just naturally helps reduce your anxiety. It's super easy to use. All you do is place a few drops of Feels under your tongue and feel a difference within minutes. The thing to remember about CBD, though, is that finding the right dose is important, and everyone's dose is different. So leave room for experimentation over the course of a week or so, and you may need to take more or less to get to where the feeling that you're looking for. If you have questions or you're new to CBD, Feels offers a free CBD hotline to help guide your personal experience. So you can always call and ask questions and they'll help you out with it. Feels works naturally to help you feel better. There's no high, hangover, or addiction. And join the Feels community to get Feels delivered to your door every month. You'll save money on every order and you can pause or cancel at any time. So become a member today by going to feels.com/WMD and you'll get 50% off your first order with free shipping. That's feals.com/WMD to become a member and get 50% off automatically taken off your first order with free shipping. Feals.com/WMD.
Let me tell you what's been breaking me.
Yeah.
So when I decided to have a third, something that I saw a lot, like when people weigh in on whether or not you should have a third, a lot of people would say, well, there's always two against one. And only that usually wasn't so much a factor because the older two are really close in age. They're only 20 months apart. And then they have their younger brother who's like 5 years younger, or actually 3 years younger than the youngest. So usually that wasn't a problem because, you know, there was the baby and there were the two older ones. But now that the youngest is four, the older boys have been using the youngest to play off one another. So the nine-year-old has figured out that he can get his youngest brother, Odie, to do anything. And Odie is at the point now where he looks to his oldest brother to answer questions for him, like what he wants to do or what song he wants to dance to. His oldest brother, my oldest Rex, he really has his youngest wrapped around his finger and he will do pretty much anything. And so his 8-year-old brother has realized this, Ajax, and so he's been trying to like kind of pull Odie over to his side, and I'll hear him talking to him and they'll be like, don't listen to Rex. He's not nice to you. Remember all those times he's been mean to you? He hits you all the time. And he'll like try to like,
you know, brainwash him or something against his brother. And they both do it. And then Odie, of course, is just so thrilled that his older brothers are interested in him that he'll do anything. And so they wield him against one, like, Odie, go to him and like hit him on the butt, or like go tell him that you know whatever, that he's a stinky butt. Like, it's always and on top of it, just the 9-year-old is so mean. He's so mean to the 8-year-old. It's so sad. And so what's been happening then is the 8-year-old Ajax will feel so left out. So he's constantly like they were out in the Intex pool. I like to say Intex pool because we don't have a fucking like pool.
What's an Intex pool?
It's like an above ground inflatable pool that we'll probably put away in October or whatever. Yeah, they're great. So they were playing out there, and then, you know, Ajax comes in crying and he's like, they're so mean to me. They'll be getting ready for bed, and the other two, you know, the oldest and the youngest will be like yelling at him, and then they'll be like slamming door. Like, it's just, and he'll be like, they hate me. Ajax, you know, Rex hates me. And it's so sad. And I keep trying, like, and I keep vacillating between, like, on one hand, I want to get involved and be like, hey, like, your brother feels really sad about the way that you're treating him, you know, and trying to help them, you know, manage that and bridge that. And on the other hand, it's like, well, fucking brothers being brothers. Like, it's kind of also the circle of life that just older brothers and younger, like, they fight, they're figuring out their pecking order. But, you know, I've talked about this before, that like that Ajax often gets really like pecked, like hen pecked by his oldest brother. And I've been lately like seeing like old pictures, and Ajax looks happier. And I sometimes wonder if his brother is pecking him so hard that it has hurt him very deeply. And I'm unsure if that's even true, but I think it is. He's very sensitive. And it really hurts him that his brothers
But he's also struggled with being home and not being able to be social with other kids.
He like struggles more than, the most.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, it could be a combo, you know?
He's, like, so excited for school to start again. And I was like, what are you looking forward to most? And he was like, recess, lunchtime.
Betsy, when they were young, did they have the same dynamic? When the older two were young?
They always fought a lot. And the oldest one is super smart. And my middle one, Ajax, is super like big and strong. Mm-hmm. So they both would kind of like fight each other with those weapons. But yeah, our oldest is like ice cold. Like, he's savage. He's brutal. He's brutal.
See, I'm – oh, no, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, he just says incredibly mean, harsh things. And it's like, yikes, dude.
Does he say them to you as well?
Yeah.
Like what?
I mean, if he gets really mad, he just kind of like sees red and he kind of rages. Like, so he'll – I mean, he says that he saves the worst things for Ajax. But, I mean, on Father's Day, he said, fuck you, Daddy. My husband. Sorry. And no,
no, you don't should have laugh. To you should laugh. Kids curse.
No. It's hilarious and so profoundly fucked up. And he's, you know, he said to me, like, you're a bad parent. What kind of mother? You're a bad mother. So yeah, like he pierces us all to the core on the reg. So yeah, that's where I'm at.
And he's the super smart one versus the like more athletic one, right?
Yeah. And it's not even that he's just like, he's not even athletic. He's just like bigger. Like, he wears bigger clothes. He wears bigger shoes. He's always been like physically matched, if not, you know,
could outmatch his older brother. And he's also like very sensitive and very artistic. You know, he's easy to hurt if you know all the spots to sort of
which brothers always do.
Oh, don't they though?
I am relating so intensely to what you're saying, and it's actually making me feel better to hear you say this because I've been sort of worried about similar things. Elliot and Owen, for the most part, Elliot, like I feel like we really lucked out. We didn't have a lot of sibling rivalry at the beginning, although I feel like it's starting to come out now. I think because Owen just started walking, so yeah. Maybe Elliot, like it's weird how that has changed. I think
that's
before
a game changer, for
it
real.
Really, I think it is because before it's like Owen is the baby, Elliot is the big boy, and now all of a sudden Owen is more like Elliot. Yes.
Yeah.
For the most, you know, oftentimes I like melt at how sweet it is. Elliot said to me, mommy, I love Owen. He's my cutie. And aww. I had this like big dumb grin on my face for like 2 hours. I was like, why? Yeah. This is so sweet. But on the other hand, he'll also sometimes just decide that Owen shouldn't be playing with whatever toy he's playing with. So he'll rip it out of Owen's hands and throw it.
Yep.
Or whatever Owen, you know, if Owen does something that Elliot doesn't want him to do, Elliot will just like go, no, like in his face. Yep. And then Owen starts crying. And when Elliot cries, it's like a normal kid crying and it's sad, but it's still like, it feels like it's on the surface. It feels like he's communicating that he's angry or he's, you know, disappointed yeah. or trying to get his way or whatever. When Owen cries, it is like, it's like this wordless devastation, grief.
Oh, no.
Like someone has betrayed him. It is like, I trusted you and you did this to me. I've like never, it's so sad. Just in it, it's just like, yeah, it's just like the sound of his cry and the look. And so when Elliot yells at him, he cries in this way. And I worry about like, what is the effect of the accumulation of someone getting in his face and yelling at him? Because like on every day, there's probably at least one instance of him just crying because of the way Elliot treated him.
Yeah.
And Elliot didn't have that at all. And I feel like despite the stories I'm saying, like I feel like Elliot has turned out really well. And I just like how is it going to have affected Owen? And my husband was saying something about like, you know, but maybe there's strengths that will come from it that we're not aware of. Like he'll, you know, learn to stand up for himself or learn boundaries or blah, blah, blah. I don't know that I'm buying that. I don't know what to do.
That's my hope too. But yeah, I sometimes, instead of seeing that, I see him just being hurt.
Yeah. Like what you were saying about the looking at the photos. Like I really felt that too.
Yeah.
Because that's my fear is that, because like we're very proud of the fact that, that makes us sound a little bit like assholes, but for the most part, like we're happy with the fact that like Elliot has made it to 3.5 and like knock wood, there's have not really been any traumas in his life, you know, for the most part, everything's like pretty stable, pretty good. But with Owen, it's the same, except that he's got this little person yelling at him and taking his toys away all the time.
Exactly. Yeah, I feel that. My Ajax had said, ever since I was 5, Rex has been mean to me. And I think that's true. Yeah, because about 3 years ago, he just started pecking him real hard on a pretty consistent basis. And
Do you ever talk to Rex about it?
Yeah. Yeah. He does not. He will not. We cannot get him to ever take responsibility for anything. Anything. He always makes it out to be like he's the aggrieved party and his brother has it coming in some way, or that his brother somehow does this to him as well. So that makes it okay.
Well, I remember. So I have two older brothers who are 11 years older than I am. So really my experience of being a little kid was that I was the first because they didn't live with us for most of the time. So, and I have a younger sister. So it was really my sister and me. And it's like, I was the older, you know, the older sister, she was the younger one.
Time out. Hang on, Allison. I'm so sorry. Yes. So Amanda, you have to go lead a meeting at work on Zoom now.
Yeah.
So, before you go, Amanda, I just want to let you know that you're doing a great job.
Thank you.
And I'm sorry you had to watch your kid get stitches.
Me too.
All right.
Me too.
Have a fun meeting.
Thank you for being on the show, Allison. And
nice meeting you. Good luck with everything.
So nice meeting you. Sorry I had to leave early.
No worries.
All right, everybody. I'll talk to you later.
Bye.
Okay. So please continue, Allison.
Right. So I was the older sister. My sister was younger. And I definitely remember feeling like she was the one provoking me. She was the one being unfair. And then I would, you know, stand up for myself or just not be in love with her behavior. And then she would cry. And then my parents, because she was little and looked helpless and was super duper cute, and I was awkward at that point, like, then, you know, they would take her side and they would get mad at me. And it felt
unfair. Says that we are always taking the youngest side and that we don't ever believe him, which is fair. 'Cause you're right. Like, it's at the end of the day, it's like, you are way bigger. You should definitely know better. And this little person is, you know, smaller than you, and they can't defend themselves like you.
Right. Like, a lot of the time, or there was a period of time where it was Owen getting in Elliot's space, and then Elliot would push Owen, and of course then Owen would cry. But the truth is, you know, it was Owen being annoying.
Sure.
I wish Elliot understood that. And I would even say, like, he doesn't understand. He's just a baby. But that's got to get really old when you're also basically just a big baby yourself.
Right. You're like, no, we're both the same.
Yeah. I don't know. It was interesting hearing you say that you're, like, trying to let them work it out. Because maybe I probably should be more hands-off. Like, today,
they got to learn how to, like, manage that stuff throughout their life, right?
Yes.
And, like, this is the time to kind of spar in a safer environment.
Yeah.
But, yeah, who knows what kind of maybe permanent fucking damage they're
– that's what I'm worried about. Like, you know, am I not creating a safe, comfortable environment for Owen to grow up in?
Yeah, right.
I know that sounds extreme, but
exactly what you mean.
This morning I was talking to Elliot and it was, like, pretty calm. It's sort of like that relationship advice to, like, talk about it with your partner, but, like, do it at a time, like, not when you're in bed or whatever the thing is, you know? So, that's a really weird way to lead into what I'm about to say. But it was, like, calm with Elliot. So I just wanted to have, like, a casual, calm conversation about not getting in his brother's face and yelling no.
Yes.
And he seemed to understand it.
I love that. I just have, like, a little suggestion.
Yeah, just, like, you're doing such a great job as a big brother.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I noticed that sometimes, you know, you yell no at Owen and he cries and he doesn't really understand it. So I think you should, you know, if there's something he's doing that you don't have to do, tell me. That's
right.
What, like, our refrain. And then he got this, like, sad look on his face, like he had been reprimanded. And he was like, there's something else I did wrong.
Uh-oh.
Oh, no. What? Not like he was confessing, but, like, that was his reaction to – yeah. No. It was just like that was sort of what he was saying about this. Like, I did another thing wrong. And I felt so – and then I tried to be like, no, no, no. Like, I tried to backpedal. Like, you're not doing anything. Ugh. It was just – it was awful.
So, Allison, tell us or just tell me what has what has broken you? What has driven you to drink?
I have been broken and driven to drink so many times. But the most recent one that happened just yesterday is my 3-year-old has decided he no longer likes hugs and kisses. And no, it is not as dramatic as a sushi fracas or the devastation of Ajax. But
I feel like we need to name this episode Sushi Fracas, by the way.
Perfect. But I'm shocked at how much it is bothering me. And I know that, like,
he's just asserting his autonomy and this is something important for him to do. But I just feel like three is really young so for this to be happening. And also, he started calling me mom instead of mommy sometimes. And I'm just like, we're in a quarantine. Like, you're not, there's no outside forces. Like, where are you picking up these bad teenage ways? But anyway, I asked if I could have a hug, and he said, no, he doesn't like hugs. But then he said to me, since you like hugs, mommy, you can hug yourself. And then he demonstrated wrapping my arms around myself, which I really feel like is like a three-year-old's way of like saying like, go fuck yourself.
100%. That was exactly what happened in my mind. I was like, oh, like, go fuck yourself.
So I was like, okay. And then usually Daniel and I both go into his room just to put him to bed. And then I put Owen to bed and Daniel puts Elliot to bed, but we both go into Elliot's room. And then like, you know, I hang out for like a minute and then I'm like, okay, it's time for mommy to go to bed. Can I have a hug and a kiss? Mm-hmm. And then he gives me a hug and a kiss. And then, or like I hug him, I kiss him. Then he gives me a kiss on my cheek. And then I pat his head in a specific way. And then it's like very ritualized.
Yeah.
And then I leave. But he has recently, and honestly, I think what this is related to is his like transitional object or security object is those Wubbin-Up pacifiers, those pacifiers that have the little stuffed animal on the end.
P.S. For anyone listening who has a newborn or is just about to have a kid or is just thinking about a kid, Wubbin-Ups, first of all, the name is fucking stupid. But second of all, they will save your life.
Yeah, they're great.
They're amazing.
We've had so many over the years. Like at a certain point, because he never got attached to a stuffed animal, never got attached to a blanket or anything, but it's just been these Wubbin-Ups, which he calls Uppy, which I think is him trying to say Wubbin-Up, like since he's barely talking. They're Uppies.
Yeah, we have Wubbin-Ups that have, this is so gross, have been like handed down from child to child.
I think that's kind of sweet. And I mean, it's a little bit gross, but
like you're supposed to, they say like, oh, it's going to break off and choke everyone to death. But I don't know. They never got like weird. We just put them in the clothes washer and it was fine.
Yeah. Apparently like breast implants, they have an expiration date and you're supposed to like get new ones. But same with bottle nipples. But we have recycled our bottle nipples and it's been fine. They're silicone. Nothing's ever happening to those things. So he had his uppies until like he still likes to have them. And, you know, if I ever post anything on social media, there's always a few people who have to let me know, like, he really shouldn't have a pacifier anymore. And it's like a thing we feel insecure about, just that, you know, a lot of kids gave them up a lot younger and he still loves them and we're okay with that. When we took him to the dentist for the first time, we were afraid the dentist was going to read us the riot act, but he was really very like cool and chill about it and was just like, yeah, they usually give him up by four. And when he does, you know, the teeth will kind of go back to where they're supposed to be.
Yeah. I want to interject and say that I think we all get a lot of guilt about letting our kids have pacifiers past the age of like one.
Right.
I know that for my older two kids, they both just stopped with pacifiers at age one. And so I never had to like really deal with it. Mm-hmm. But my 4-year-old now, he used his pacifier like constantly all day, all night. His teeth were royally fucked.
That's how it is.
A really weird. But here's the thing. He's 4 and a half now and his teeth are totally normal. His mouth is not malformed and it's totally fine. And anyone who's like, you know, pressuring people, you know, we're all getting from everyone, the doctor, the dentist, the friends, the parents, like, you know, the grandparents, just know, like, I want everyone to repeat my parenting mantra, which is, it's probably fine. It's probably fine.
I love it. So when did Odie give it up?
When did he give it up?
And did he do it by himself or did you have to do it somehow?
We had to do it. It was either his third or his fourth birthday. I can't remember.
Okay, that makes
it
me
might have been his
better
birthday.
Because Elliot's like he's got an open bite, and the it's so like it's so clear the way that the pacifier has affected his teeth. So that makes me so happy that it's normal,
like a duck bill shaped upper
but it's
palate.
So cute. I think it's really cute, but
it goes away. I don't know. In the case of us, it totally like he looks totally normal. There's no trace of it.
Good. So, yeah, actually, I was because he's toilet training too, as well right now. And I'm like, I don't want to like compound everything. The dentist seems fine. But he was napping on Daniel, and Daniel like got a good gander at the duck bill and was like, okay, we have to do something about this. So we said to him one morning, like, honey, how about you leave the uppies in bed? You can have them in bed, but how about we don't have it during the day?
Yeah, and that was our first step. Yeah.
And like in exchange for that, we're going to get you this toy that you want. Mm. So it went so smoothly. Like he has, he didn't put up, he was like totally fine with it, on board. Like in the morning, he'll even say to me, like, remember, no uppies.
Nice.
But I think this new no hugs and kisses thing might be related. Like, I feel like he's like, you're taking away something I like, I'm taking away something you like. So this regimented bedtime routine that apparently I need more than him has changed. And now he doesn't want me to come into his room. He just wants to say goodnight to me like in the living room. And so last night he was like, maybe like 8 feet away from me. And he's like, okay, good night, mommy.
Social distancing.
Yes. And I said, can I have a hug and a kiss? And he's like, no, I have to hold my things. He wasn't holding anything. Like his dad was holding the water that he takes into his bedroom and the book that he wanted to bring. And he's like, no, I have to hold my things. And I'm like, okay, so no hug and kiss. And he's like, no, I have to hold my things. And I realized I'm going to have to watch that little shit spin on his heel and walk away from me without a hug and a kiss. And I have to, it was so weird. I really like flash forward to like one day we're going to drop him off at college.
Right. Mom, drop me off two blocks away from high school. Yeah.
It was so weird. And it was weird like how it plunged me into this like very sad mood.
Yes. That's devastating.
It was like, devastating. But
we worked so hard to raise these kids. And that's like the main thing we get back is like hugs and kisses. That's a main transaction because we don't get a lot of other stuff.
It's the currency. But honestly, it's the only power he has.
Yeah.
So, but then Daniel was like, why don't you give mommy a kiss? Because I had this sad look on my face that Daniel later – by the way, Daniel is coming off like so well here as if he's like the perfect parent. He's really good, but we all have our moments. But anyway, because afterwards he was like, I don't think – you didn't do anything wrong, but I think that you should try not to let him see how sad it makes you because you don't want to make him feel like he's responsible for your emotions. He's just like trying this out. I'm like, you're totally right. But anyway, so I had this like sad, dejected face. And then Daniel's like, why don't you give mommy a kiss? And he's like, okay. And then he came over and gave me a kiss. And then I'm like, can I give you a hug? And then it was totally fine. So there was like a happy ending on it. But I truly thought like, this is it.
Has it only happened the one time?
Yeah. The threatening to cut me off from hugs and kisses before he went to bed, that has only happened once, but it's been a few days now where he's like announced as if like announcing what he's going to be when he grows up. Like, I don't like hugs and kisses anymore. I don't like that.
Oh, man.
Doesn't it seem young? Oh,
that's so hard. That's so hard because, like, of course, when we were kids, everyone was like, Go kiss
your weird uncle.
Your weird uncle, exactly. And you're like, I don't want to. And they're like, you better go fucking kiss your weird uncle. And like, that's problematic for a host of reasons.
Right.
And so we, of course, in our generation of parents, I think for the most part, we're like, your body is yours. And like, sorry, grandma, she doesn't feel like hugging you. We're not going to push it. And, and a lot of older relatives don't get it, which is totally understandable. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like yeah, you don't want to be like, go on, even though you don't feel like it, like kiss and hug these people.
Yeah, like don't listen to your instincts. I can remember being like the height of an ottoman, basically, and being kind of nervous about having to cross through the furniture and the legs to go hug an old person who smelled like perfume that I didn't feel comfortable with.
Yep. Yeah. I feel
so
like
I don't want to do that to him.
Childhood was just being like not manhandled, because no one like hurt me, no one abused me, but like just kind of manhandled by various old relatives.
Yes.
Like my mom's longtime boyfriend's mom would always like pinch my cheeks. Ew. Like it was a fucking stereotype. And it was just like, you know, imagine a dog with their head out the window and their like gums flapping. It was like that, but like against my will. And I wasn't a smiling dog.
Right.
It was painful.
It was like that, but like completely not like that.
Yeah.
Like that, but like the opposite of that.
Okay. Yeah.
No, but like, I get what you're saying. The loose,
and we were in a car.
The flapping of the gums and cheeks. Like he flapped your face.
Yeah. She flapped my face. And it was painful, and I hated it, but I had to like endure it.
Yeah, my brothers gave me noogies, and I feel like they thought it was like a fun game, and it hurt. I did not like it.
I think a lot of that stuff was like we were raised to really like take a lot of stuff that's kind of like mildly abusive. And looking back, it's like, yeah, that wasn't cool at all. And it's really hard to figure, like my kids have now learned, actually my middle kid, Ajax, the 8-year-old, he has figured out how to, in true brother form, it's really something to behold, he's figured out how to weaponize farts.
I love it.
And so now
my entire family thinks farts are funny.
There you go. Yeah. So he like, you mean your sons and your husband and you?
Yes. Okay, like even the 1.5-year-old, if he hears one or if he releases one, he giggles. So
that's adorable.
Yeah.
So yeah, the 8-year-old now will be like, hey, come here. And then he'll like, or like, he can fart on people's heads. Like he can do it on command. And I don't think he has any idea just how powerful that's going to be his whole life. But yeah.
I admire it. I admire that.
But when you think about it, it's awful how many of us got, you know, brothers farting on our heads our whole lives and stuff.
Right.
Like, it's kind of terrible.
Oh, God. I just remembered something else they would do.
What?
They would, like kind of pin me down and then let, like, a big blob of spit dangle and then suck it up. Yeah,
no!
I forgot about that.
That is classic. That's
maybe
some classic brothering.
It really is. It's like brothering straight out of, like, Goonies era.
It's like an 80s movie. Gosh.
And they also had bench presses, which is like a very 80s movie thing.
Oh my God. Are they older than you? Or
they're
11. You were oldest.
No. So I have brothers from my dad's first marriage who are, they're twins, and they're 11 years older than I am.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry, but that, oh my God. They
and
must
I
have like terrorized you.
I mean, it wasn't that bad. I'm mentioning the things that terrorized me. It was the spitting and the noogies. The rest was like pretty okay. But I have this lifelong, I'm like repulsed by people hawking loogies, or like when I'm walking and I see a loogie just glistening on the street, or
My youngest sister has, I also have like a complicated family situation, not unlike what you're describing, possibly more complicated, but my youngest sister has a real thing about worms and snakes. She like freaks out, and it's because my brothers would always take worms and put them on her, and she's like phobic. And I'm sure
similar.
It's similar.
There was this guy that I had a crush on, and I remember we were waiting outside to be let into the art studio at our where the art class was at our high school. The teacher's name was Mrs. Painter, by the way, which is very, like, very weird.
I love that so much. Really quick, did she have an asymmetrical haircut, and did she wear, like, flowy things?
No, but my grade school teacher, Mrs. Sherwin, my grade school art teacher was totally that. She'd wear like denim maxi skirts and cardigans and the chunky bracelets and like turquoise and wood jewelry. She totally was that. No, Mrs. Painter also taught history, and she was like this benevolent but stylish older lady who had like whitish hair and a bun and glasses. Great. But I always loved that her name was Mrs. Painter and she taught art. So anyway, we were waiting for her to let us into the class, and this guy who up to this point I had a big crush on all of a sudden just went like hawked a loogie at a bush, and I watched it like catch on a leaf and then dangle, and I still haven't forgotten about it. It's so awful.
And of course he had no idea. I mean, he should have known not to do that anyway, but ugh, gross.
I think it was an unreciprocated crush, and that challenged it quite a bit. So can I tell you something?
Yes.
I took an improv class from you in New York many moons ago.
What?
I was trying to think of when it was. I think because I moved to New York in 2002, and I think it was either 2002 or 2003. I took a few classes at UCB. I took a sketchwriting class with Ian Roberts, and then I took like improv level one with you. And I remember you probably taught so many classes that you don't remember specific classes, but I do remember. I was thinking about it. I remember some of the names of the other people in the class because that exercise we did at the very beginning to remember other people's names, where you'd like say the name and do a gesture. I remember some of them. I remember you said something about your age, and I was like, "How old are you?" And you're like, "I wish I could remember what you said." You didn't.
You don't want to know. You don't want to know.
You were like, "Ugh, it's ridiculous," or something like that. Yeah.
People would always ask me my age because I appeared
very young, right?
And I was very young. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was older than a vast majority of the people that I taught, and
younger than them.
What?
You said you were older than them. Do you mean younger than them?
I was younger than a vast majority of my own students.
Yes.
And so people would always be like, "How old are you?" And I would just never tell them because I didn't want them to feel weird.
Mm-hmm.
Because I knew that they would.
Right. There was a woman in there named Addie Walsh. And I think her son was in there too. And I later saw her name in the credits of all my children.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. a real
crazy
star. And also what I remember is, did the class move around? Because I remember I took another class after, but I remember various locations, I think.
Yep. That sounds right. There were certainly times there where we were, it was the UCB improv diaspora.
Yes.
The diaspora. Diaspora. Oh my god. I'm an idiot. But
wait, why did it keep why was it ambulatory? Why did it keep moving around?
Because we had I'm trying to think. I think it was during the period. Okay, right. When we were at 22nd Street, we had the upstairs space, and then we got kicked out of that because of fire code violations. And during that period, we performed and taught at just like places all over the place.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And then we got our place on 26th Street, and then we were able to have like steady. Oh my gosh. So you were my student. I hope I didn't suck. I was like out of my mind when I was younger, and like,
no, you
reeling
were good.
Reeling from some like PTSD in my life that was like never resolved, and I look back and I'm like, oh my god, I was a fucking animal.
You know, you were really good. I feel like I sucked. Like I could never let go enough. Like I remember there was an exercise where we were supposed to like lay on the ground and be babies of different ages.
Yes.
Do you remember that one?
Yes.
And there were some people in the class who were like, "You are giving this your all." And I just feel like I was like, I feel stupid enough to do the things that were required for a Herald. But I did learn. Like, and then I went on and I did a class with Sean Conroy But I like missed a lot of that one. And then I was like, I don't think this is for me. But I feel like I learned a lot. And like, it's been fun to watch other people whose names I remember from my time at UCB go on to do a lot of cool things.
Who do you remember?
Will Hines, Elliot Kalin, Josh Rubin.
Oh my God. Was Josh Rubin in your class?
Yes.
Okay.
Do you remember that class?
I mean, I definitely remember that I taught baby Josh Rubin.
Yeah.
He was like a little baby.
He was.
Right? He was so little. And he was like, I feel like he had just gotten out of college, maybe. Like, if that, maybe he was so young. And then we just like watched his star ascend.
I feel like the way he said his name was like Josh Rubin. I feel like I still remember that. And then there was also a kid named Billy Hot Chocolate.
Oh my God, Billy Hot Chocolate, yes.
What happened to him?
I can't remember if he still goes by Billy Hot Chocolate. He might go by Billy Parker now.
Oh.
And I think I don't think he improvises anymore, but I think he's kind of like adjacently, you know, he's got a finger in it. Like he might be, I don't know.
And Elliot Kalin and Will Hines, I think that they were in the sketchwriting class I took.
Who's Elliot? I don't know who Elliot is.
Elliot Kalin wrote for Jon Stewart for a while.
No way.
Yeah. And then he does the Flophouse podcast. Huh. And also he wrote a children's book, I think it's called Horse Meets Dog. I have it. It's very good. Oh, it's very funny.
So it sounds like he's a real loser, just up to nothing, huh?
Yeah. Now he went on to do nothing. And he has two or three kids as well. So can I ask you about this decision to have a third? Because I struggled so much to get my two kids and I felt like, oh my God, like I got everything I wanted children-wise.
Right.
And then my period was really late one month, very recently. And I was like, this is probably perimenopause, like something's going on. And then I'm like, well, I should at least take a pregnancy test because if I go to a doctor, they're going to ask, is there any way I could be pregnant? And I don't think there is, but I should just take it. And in between the time when I took it and the time when I got my negative result, I really started fantasizing about having another kid. And I think it's like in the face of knowing that I just don't, I mean, I could email my fertility doctor and be like, is there any way that this could possibly work? You know, but I my husband definitely doesn't want another one. And I don't think there's any way I could actually do it. But I've started fantasizing about having a bigger family.
Huh. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely a lifestyle choice. I'll tell you that. Because all of a sudden it's like things like going on airplanes and, you know.
Even cars. We would have to get a different car.
Yes, that we had to get a different car.
And a different house, I think.
And a whole new name. And a new...
I would have to go by Billy Parker.
New passports, identities for everyone. Okay, go by Billy Parker. We're all Billy Parker now. Everyone be cool. So yeah, I mean, it definitely changes. Like even I was trying to find RVs for like going on a trip. And you can find RVs for four people for days. But if you want five people, it's like a whole fucking thing. So it definitely is like a choice. So that said, I know for me personally, you know, so my family situation is my parents were married. They had me. They divorced. And then my dad remarried and had three more kids with my stepmom. And my mom stayed single, but adopted three kids on her own.
Oh, wow.
So I'm one of seven.
Wow.
But I'm also kind of an only child. Mm-hmm. And you know, because I'm at least 8 years older than the next sibling.
I see.
And actually, the oldest one, one of my siblings he was adopted from Honduras and it took like 2 years for him to arrive. So I really was like an only child until I was like 10. Mm-hmm. So for me, two kids always felt really small. Mm-hmm. Three seemed really normal because in both of my parents' houses, there were three kids in addition to me. And so that felt like really like a normal size. My dad comes from four and my mom comes from three. My husband, on the other hand, for fucking generations and generations, his whole family, both sides, everyone has two kids and that's fucking it. And and the idea of three kids was like insane to him. Mm-hmm. But I just, here's, for me personally, I felt like there was a person, missing that I had yet to, there was like a, this is so woo-woo, but there was like a spirit out there that I was waiting to meet, and I needed to make that last person.
When did you start feeling that? That's so interesting.
When did I start feeling that? I don't know. I think it was always kind of in the back of my mind. As when I had my very first kid, I wanted another one right away. Mm-hmm. Like right after I had that baby, I was like, great, I'm ready, you know, to do this again, like immediately. Yeah. And part of it is just like getting up the courage to do it. Mm-hmm. I feel like getting pregnant and having a baby, it's a little like bungee jumping or something. Not that I've ever bungee jumped, but like you really have to get kind of like worked up to get to that point where like, okay, I'm ready for this physical, emotional yes. challenge. Mm-hmm. And once you're in it, you're like fucking in it, you know?
Right.
And so after having my first, I was like, okay, I'm ready just to jump right back in. So
how to do this.
Yes. And like, it's sort of like rip off the Band-Aid. Let's do this like real fast, right in a row. Mm-hmm. And then we'll be like in the shit and then we'll be out. And so that, you know, so then they were 20 months apart. But I always kind of wanted another one. But we were living in Brooklyn and there was no chance that we could afford or have space for another kid. And then when we moved out to Los Angeles, it was sort of up in the air still. It's like, oh, we might be able to still have another kid if we wanted. And we were both, I think I was more into it, but my husband was way more in, you know, on the fence. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there was actually when I got pregnant with, so when we moved out here, my sister lived with us and she was like my wife. Like she helped with the kids and with the house and stuff.
That's
and
nice.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was amazing. And because of that, I was like, well, there's only so much time that she's going to live with us before she leaves. And once she leaves, I won't be able to manage three kids probably. Mm-hmm. So I was like, I might as well just do this now because I may never have the chance. And, you know, and I'm getting older and, you know, that's always a thing in all of our heads.
Totally.
Just like, oh, is it going to be easy? Is it going to be hard to do? You know, you never know how much of a challenge it's going to be. And when I went into my first like ultrasound or whatever, they were like, oh, I don't think this zygote is like growing. This might not be a, what did they call them?
Viable.
There you go. A viable.
The fetus might be, or embryo might not be viable, maybe.
Yes, exactly. And it was like the very first. So it was so early.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay. But I was like so strangely devastated, yeah. even though it was so early and I already had two kids. But I remember crying to my husband, like, he was like, we can try again. And I was like, but I want this one. This is the one
I knew it.
And I have to say, he is a fucking ray of sunshine.
That ended up being Odie.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
He's
the one. He's the kid that is most like me. Mm-hmm. And he and I are like I think much more sort of I don't know like attuned to one mm-hmm. another. So yeah, on one hand. It's like if we had stopped at two, we would have been more than happy and more than satisfied with what we had. And you know, by now we would be in a lot of ways kind of out of the shit mm-hmm. and able to maybe travel if it weren't for, you know,
right.
coronavirus and stuff. Because that's something I really miss. Like, oh, God, I have such a travel bug and mm-hmm. having kids has really put a damper on that financially and just, you know, the ability
logistics
to go places
wise, yeah.
and not yell at someone. Like, I don't want to go to France and yell. just stay home and yell. It's free. But I do have to say, like, you know, for me personally, I just knew that there was like this person there's this like soul, which is weird because I'm not a religious person. I'm not woo-woo. I don't have crystals. But they, I had this feeling there was a person that I needed to meet, and he was the person. But and then once he was born, like I remember the day I got home, I was like, great, I'm done. I don't want to ever have another baby again. Like my body was finished. So I don't know. I feel like the fucking universe like kind of made that decision for me.
Right. That's fascinating. Yeah, I always knew that I wanted more than when I was young. I would say I want two or three. Mm-hmm. But then when I got older, I felt like I'll be lucky if I can even have two. You know, and I might have to make this is like at the point at which it was like, okay, you know, we need a whole team of scientists to make this happen and a shitload of money. So at that point, it was like, I'll be lucky if I can even have one, and I'm going to need to make peace with the fact that maybe I'm only going to be able to have one.
Right.
And you know, I like my therapist was like, you know, there's all sorts of benefits to only having one. There's all sorts of benefits to having siblings. Like there really is no better situation. And I was like, okay, bullshit. So, but, you know, and it was interesting when my second came home, the whole feeling of the family changed. It was weird. Like I never felt like something was missing before, but it felt so much more complete.
Yeah.
When he got there. And it, so it's new that all of a sudden I'm like, maybe it would even feel more complete if there was like another one.
Right. How your, your youngest is a year and a half.
Yeah. I mean, really, it was so hard to get those two. Like, I think that if I really wanted to have another one, it would be like adoption or like donor eggs or something. Uh-huh. And also I was so happy to not have to do injections, to not have to do all the procedures, to not be pregnant anymore.
Yeah.
I really think it's a bit of like, you know, in this pandemic, we're all kind of like, what the fuck is going on? And I think
what is
like,
life? What is my life?
Like getting pregnant, it's something that I like, it's been the focus of my life for the past many years. And it's like a project. And I think I'm just a little bit at sea maybe right now. And I think maybe that's why I want to do it. Even though like if a miracle happened and I could have another kid, that would be great. But I also think like it's going to be great with these two guys.
Yeah. Well, two things. I mean, one, like fucking moms who are pregnant and give birth at like, you know, 45 and up are just like fucking superheroes. I don't know how that works.
There's higher risks. Yeah. I don't quite know how they do that either.
I was so tired this last pregnancy, and my whole body, it was like, I was by the end of my pregnancy, it was like, I don't say this to undermine people who have disabilities, but I felt very like almost like disabled. Like I felt like I couldn't do the things that I normally could do. I felt like
that's true. If you drop something, you can't get it.
I just felt so trapped in my body.
Yeah.
And it was such a relief to not be pregnant. So, but I know people who had, you know, babies in their late 40s, and I'm just like amazed that they ever left the house.
In their late 40s? How is that even possible? I mean, I guess it is.
It's complicated. I mean, you know, you've been there.
Right.
In a lot of ways, right? But yeah, it's really fucking complicated. Do you act in shows or like write shows?
I have done a little bit of that, but no, that I don't.
I just know that in the past when I have produced like I used to have a partner, a comedy partner, and we would do two woman shows, and we would put just all of our time and energy. It was like all we thought of all the time. And it was like birthing this fucking sketch show. And you had all these hopes about what it would do and what sort of things you could attain from it. And then there was always this moment, this lull when the show was over and sort of everything died down where you were like, oh, like it was like depressing
I definitely have career things like that where it's like everything is like the preparation and the focus and the work and the worry and the like running through to my head, and because I've done like, you know, live shows and things like that, and it's like and then when it's over you're like, oh, now what?
So yeah, I know now what? Yeah. It's like, oh, I thought that was going to lead to maybe something, you know. So I feel like even giving birth can sometimes be like that. Because like you're pregnant and everything's about you. And then the baby comes and now it's not about you, but it's about this other person. But then it's like at the end of the day, you're just by yourself with your shirt off all the time and covered in shit and piss. And, and you're like, oh.
And not sleeping. I'm like a big sleep person. I begin to feel insane if I don't get enough sleep. And like when you have a newborn, there's no way to get enough sleep.
Oh my God. No, it breaks your brain. And I think it does it on, honestly, I think it's like the fucking universe is like brainwashing us and like getting us acclimated to our new normal.
Well, they, like, I think I've heard that because, you know, at a certain point near the end of pregnancy, you can't sleep well. And I've heard people theorize that it's like, to get you ready.
It makes so much sense. It makes so much sense. Even when you were talking about like, when you were at first, you had two viable embryos in the beginning.
Right.
And how it was hard to be comfortable with that feeling of not having control, right? Mm-hmm. Is that what you were sort of saying?
I mean, that's what I didn't say it as articulately as that, but yes, that's what it was like. It was like, this is not the way I wanted it. But I feel like I have to, I'm supposed to be happy, but I'm scared. How am I going to do it? Yeah.
All of that just prepares you. What you said, I was like, wow, that prepares you for parenthood so well.
Yes.
Just capitulating to the chaos of it all.
Yeah. I remember someone told, like a woman who babysat for us, who's, I remember, you know, at the beginning when I would have babysitters, a way for me to like gauge whether I thought this was a good babysitter or not was like, if I feel like I'm learning something from them. Obviously like you just want to make sure your kids are safe, but it's great if like you, if they know so much about babies that you're learning from them. And, and one who is like very knowledgeable said to me that, you know, the more worked up they get, the more calm I try to get. And that is hard because I tend to like,
same,
so many, like, any one of these thousands of moments could have been like is a thing that like breaks me or makes me want to drink. It's like when one of them's like, mommy, 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 mommy,
oh my God,
mommy, mommy. Oh, and then also like our dog is barking and like scratching at something. Yeah. And then like, I'm worried that Owen's like about to like, you know, dart into another room. And then my husband, who I love, is like on his phone. And I'm like, how are you hearing any of this? Those moments I become like, my adrenaline surges. I cannot remain calm. I get really freaked out.
Same.
And so it's been like a discipline to just be like, it's okay. You know, if Wendy is like, that's our dog. If she's jumping up and like, scratching, thank you. If she's scratching something, it's okay. You know, just, right. And it's okay if I, you know, if Elliot is like, mommy, 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 you know, it's, I don't know, but those moments I hate.
Are you still in New York, Allison?
No. I was there until 2010 and then moved back to LA. And so we're in Burbank now.
Great. Oh, okay. Awesome. How do you and Greg Fitzsimmons know each other? I see that you do a podcast together.
Yes, we do Childish together. So we have been friends for years and years and years, but I initially met him. I was the news girl on the Adam Carolla show from I'm trying to remember, from 2011 to end of 2004. So for 4 years. And we initially met on the Adam Carolla show, and then we became friends and started doing each other's podcasts. And we always had this great chemistry. And so I was like, we should be doing a podcast together. And he's like, yes, but for now, why don't we just go on each other's podcasts a lot? And I'm like, fine.
Let's work.
Yeah. So we did that for a while. And then we had been talking about, we had like announced the podcast and been talking about doing it.
Let's make this official. And he's like, how about we just fuck around for a while?
He's like, listen, I'm not going to be sleeping with other people, but I don't want to feel trapped. So
I'm not going to give you a drawer. Okay.
Right. So then we actually announced it. And then it still took us a while to get our shit together. Oh, initially, it was called Loin Fruit. It was his suggestion. I think it's really funny.
I think it's funny too.
I loved that name. So many people, though, were like, love the show, but what's the name really going to be? Like, and he listened. He was like, look, I'm getting a lot of people don't like the name. So then we named it Childish, which I also think is good. I just also like
Yeah, that's a so, great yeah. name.
And so that's been that. And
it's hard for you when you have to live with that name forever. Like, I know Jimmy Pardo has never not funny, and he constantly grouses about, like, we should have never named it that. And, like, we call our show Why Mommy Drinks, but it's not a show about drinking, but people are always like, I don't like that they're making women drink. And it's like, wait, what? Mommy drinking culture.
That's funny. I didn't even think about the angle of, like, it being about drinking.
Thank you. Because it's it's just about why. Like, what have you all done to push mommy over the edge? That's what it's about. it's not about, like, oh, I'm a wine mom, and it's 9 o'clock. I mean, I don't mind taking advantage of that, but it's not what we're about.
Can we talk about mommy memes? And some of them are funny, but in general, I find, like, all that mommy blog, mommy meme culture, it, like, makes me roll my eyes.
Well, it's like a whole wormhole with, like, so many different, you know, Venn diagrams in there. Yes. I mean, I don't know. There's so many parts of motherhood that I'm just like, oh, no, I'm going to opt out of that one.
Right. Unsubscribe. Log off.
So memes are like that. Memes and blogs. I'm like, oh, that's not my style. Yeah. So I just kind of like, you know, turn away from it, because it's just, there's so much. It's so vast. And you know, so many moms, they want to be seen. They want to be heard. They want to be understood. They want to reach out. And they want to know that the feelings that they're feeling are okay. But yeah, we're all having a different experience, and I'm not always on board with
that. No, my feeling about them generally is, like, I'll read it and it'll be like, you know, dialogue, and I'm like, that never happened. That's not true. I don't believe that. And then there's one where it's like these two teenagers or men or kids, I can't remember, but, like, they're dancing. And it says, like, they're dancing in this, like, victorious way, and it's like, how I feel when my husband comes home and I tell him all the shit the kids did, and then he, like, yells at them. And right. I don't know, that one, like, rubs me the wrong way, because it's like, you're rejoicing over your husband yelling at your kids. I don't like that. But I get it. It's about feeling not heard. And well, yeah. I just posted a meme on the Childish account, so I'm going to talk.
I mean, a big thing for me is, like, whatever floats your boat, you know, if that's your deal, like, I don't want to shit on your thing just because it's not my favorite, you know, that's where
you're
I'm at.
You're a good person. I am also a good person, but I can be petty, okay? I'm sorry.
I think just because... Maybe because I'm such a weirdo, I feel like I just want to always make sure that I'm giving other people, like, what am I trying to say?
Grace to be weird.
Yeah, grace to be weird, and grace to be, like, wrong or offensive or, like, whatever your thing is. Like,
you're right.
I don't want to, like, because there's just so much mom content out there. And I would say a vast majority of it is not stuff that I like or that speaks to me, which is why we made this show.
Right.
But yeah, I'm always very conscious of shit on other moms. Like, so I just try to, like, turn a blind eye if it's stuff that I don't like. Even when people put stuff on our own, like the Why Mommy Drinks Facebook group, that I'm like, well, I just kind of like, okay.
There's also a lot of mom shame, which, like,
exactly,
I
never want to join that.
Yeah.
Yes, I've felt mom shame. I'm sure we all have felt. Yeah. It's impossible to not feel it.
No, at every turn. I think I wasn't aware until I had my child. I wasn't aware of what I thought a mom was, and that I thought, like, I have a very narrow definition of what a good mom is, and a good mom is perfect and selfless and it was so loaded. And when I fell short of that because I was human, I, like, flagellated myself and, you know,
we all did.
Right. But I wasn't conscious of it until I was in it.
Yeah.
conscious of how much I had accrued, like what I had accrued over the years in terms of like what to be a mom is.
Yeah. And it's, and we're making it up every fucking day. Am I right?
Yes. Yes. That's been a big thing for me. I, you know, these things that I was like mad at my mom about.
Yep.
Now that I'm a mom, I realize that like, no, that wasn't because it wasn't because she was a bad mom. It was because she was human. Like, yep. There's these little mistakes I made. I'm so hard on myself. I have been so hard on myself when I make a mistake. And it's like, how could I do this, my child? And it's like, because I'm human.
Wow.
I mean, thankfully, like nothing huge, but I remember
huge things happen to people, and it doesn't mean you're a bad person. See, or that you did that it
voice.
On purpose.
That voice that I had to announce it wasn't huge because I still like wouldn't. I still don't let myself off the hook for things.
There you go. See, yeah, we don't. It's hard. It's so hard. You are doing a great job, Allison.
Thank you. We are doing a great job. I can tell your concern over your kids. I can tell you are a great mom.
Thanks, friend. You are doing, but seriously, like, I don't know if people are telling you that often enough, but we all need to hear it.
Thank you.
You're doing an awesome job. You're raising two people. You are in the shit. 1-year-old and 3-year-old. Oh my God. Hey, before we go, real quick, tell everybody where they should check you out. You know, tell everyone what your podcast is, your solo podcast is, and you know, all that jazz.
I will. So please follow me on social media at Allison Rosen, just one L. It was not my choice. So that's Twitter and Instagram at Allison Rosen. And then listen to Childish, my podcast with Greg Fitzsimmons. And that's just, you know, just search Childish wherever you look for podcasts. And also, we upload full video episodes. See what we look like. I even put on makeup. And that's just go to youtube.com/Allison Rosen. And then listen to Allison Rosen is Your New Best Friend. Search that wherever you look for podcasts. And also I'm on Patreon and Cameo.
Oh my God, I don't even know what Cameo is.
Oh, can I do one more plug?
Of course.
I have a book out. It's called Tropical Attire Encouraged and Other
Wait, what's it called again?
It's called Tropical Attire Encouraged and Other Phrases That Scare Me.
Tropical Attire Encouraged and Other Phrases That Scare
Yes.
Me.
Yes. Now
That's
it was
a really funny title.
Thank you. It came from, I was invited to a tiki party and it said Tropical Attire Encouraged. And I wrote an essay about like why I won't be attending. So
I love it. You're like, no, that is not fun. It's repulsive.
Well, I mean, the thing is like Tropical Attire Encouraged, you know that if you go in a sweater and jeans, you're not going to feel okay. And so, but I wrote it. It's before I had kids.
Okay.
But, had I started IVF? I don't know. It's like right before.
It's
the prequel to this podcast.
Oh, beautiful. Well, okay. I'm going to try to close the show the way Amanda does, but Amanda's so good at it, which is why she does it. But let me give it a try.
You can do it. I believe in you.
Thank you, Allison. So if if you find yourself watching one of your children scream in their face. Oh God, Amanda, you make it look so easy. If you find yourself being unsure of how many kids you're ever going to fucking have, or if you're ruining everyone, or
like if you should run when you hear the word sushi.
There you go. Oh, fuck it. I'm Betsy, and I start the show, and Amanda ends it, and that's just what's up. Just know, everyone, you are doing a great job.
My mommy drinks.
Have you ever encountered an unexplained hairy bipedal hominid in the woods?
Have you received telepathic messages from an unidentified aerial phenomenon?
If so, then you need to listen to Bigfoot Collectors Club. I'm Michael McMillan.
And I'm Bryce Johnson.
And together with super producer
Riley Bray,
we make up the Bigfoot Collectors Club.
That's right. Every week we talk to actors, comedians, writers, and paranormal experts about their personal paranormal histories and share stories of high strangeness.
Like the time when we talked to Craig Ferguson about the Loch Ness Monster and when a sea witch told them he had raven magic.
Or the time I asked Pitch Perfect's Anna Camp her opinion on cattle mutilations. Past guests have included Rachel Bloom, Jen Kirkman, Paul F. Tompkins, Bobcat Goldthwait, and more.
So if you've ever been abducted alongside five reindeer by an alien with drills for hands, or witnessed Bigfoot crawl out of an interdimensional portal,
don't laugh, happens all the time.
Then check out Bigfoot Collectors Club on Campfire Media or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bigfoot Collectors Club, you're here to believe us.
Wait, is that how it goes?
Campfire.